Heiligen Gottes.
Ich hab ein Mordeschlag!
Searching for the depth of my own soul. I bleed, but far beneath my cover keeps the red from leaking. I'm bleeding on the inside. Fear before the fall. 6 feet above the next time. I lose it all.
Alien Podcast, Episode 18, Exorcisms.
Some of the recording from Annalise Michael, which everybody may know from the 2005 film The Exorcism of Emily Rose,
right,
was based upon her life.
Did you ever see that movie, by the way?
No, I've never actually watched the movie. I've read quite a bit about the actual exorcism, and of course I've listened to tapes.
The movie wasn't very good. It wasn't very good.
Yeah, that's what everybody says, is the movie wasn't very good at all.
It focused more on the trial of that priest and her family than it did on the actual exorcism itself. As far as exorcisms go, the Exorcist is still the definitive movie on it.
Yes.
And from everything I've read, it's the closest thing to a real thing.
Now, did you ever listen to any of the old Art Bell shows with Father Malachi Martin?
Oh yeah. Oh good. I've got him memorized.
Yeah. You gotta love Father Malachi, and hope he rests in peace.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, they say that, you know, that people ask you a question, you know, if you got to sit down and have dinner with three people in the world, dead or alive, he'd be one of my three. So
yeah.
You know.
Did you ever hear Bill Burns from UFO Hunters talking about Father Malachi with Art?
No, I never did.
He brought up a rather interesting point, and it was something I questioned when I very first heard Father Malachi's story. And that was after 25 years of being an exorcist within the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church released him from all of his duties.
Well, he asked to be released from them most.
Right, right. But that's not something that generally the Catholic Church does.
No, they don't.
It's one of those things where if you're an exorcist, you're a lifelong exorcist, and right, you're going to stay behind their veil, so to speak. But Bill, according to what Bill Burns was saying, was Father Malachi was actually involved with several of the alphabet government agencies, including the CIA.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Which made a whole lot of sense whenever you took a look at the fact that the Catholic Church released him from his duties. So that in itself is something that I think really sort of holds a lot of credit in the aspect of, why would the Catholic Church let him go? And it makes a whole lot more sense whenever you say, well, it's probably because he was tied in with government agencies.
Yeah. Yeah. But because he had always said he just didn't like the way things were going in the Catholic Church. And
right.
I mean, he was still a priest even to the end. He was just, you know, he was released from a couple of his vows is all it was, really.
But, right.
And he didn't have to answer to a bishop or any of that. But no, they did that really no problem when he tried to do it. So,
and that, you know, that's something anymore that I don't think that a lot of people really realize about exorcisms is the Catholic Church doesn't really recognize exorcists and exorcisms the way that they used to. The Catholic Church looks now for more of a psychological explanation to things rather than looking at the possible demonic possession, really, of somebody or something. So there are a lot of priests and even some bishops out there that think, no, this can't be an exorcism, that it's either psychological or they simply no longer believe in that, which is really surprising to ever think that, you know, someone high up, especially within the Catholic Church, may not necessarily believe in demonic possessions anymore.
Well, it's not so much even demonic possession as it even Father Martin had talked about the fact that most of the younger priests, this was back in the 80s and 90s, that they weren't so much taught so much as you know, there being evil in the world, and that, you know, the Catholic Church had kind of moved on from the fact that there was, you know, a true evil in the world. And, you know, I tend to believe it. I think that, you know, they kind of have basically said, yeah, well, you know, we don't actually believe in the devil anymore, you know. And it's almost as if to say the Catholic Church has bigger fish to fry, which, of course, they do. But,
yeah,
you know, I think that, you know, the older priests and the younger ones are, it's a total different game. Now, I'm not Catholic, so I don't know all the ins and outs of it. I mean, I know you are, but, their formation was totally different after, you know, from basically what, from that Second Vatican Council in 62 or something like that.
Yes.
A lot of things changed after that.
When Vatican II come about, there was a lot of separation. To give everybody a very good example, the actor Mel Gibson is a very, very much a diehard Catholic. And Mel actually, from what I understand, attends Mass every single day. And he has a church on his property in California where Mass is said every day, and it's a pre-Vatican II church. In other words, they don't go along with all of the modern philosophies. For instance, Mass is still said in Latin.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like a Russian Orthodox Catholic Church or something like that.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It is a pretty much the same thing as a Russian Orthodox. It's not called a Russian Orthodox,
right,
so to speak. It's just pre-Vatican II.
Yeah, old calendar or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, in this conversation about exorcisms and that's something I would like to stress to people is, you know, Paul and I were joking about it a little while ago, but this is something that, to me, you cannot take seriously enough. It's one of those things, no matter how bad you think it is, chances are it could be a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize is that not only does it cover, you know, the demonic possession and everything like that, but it also goes along with alcoholism and drug addiction and everything else that comes that way. You know, I think I've seen glimpses of true evil in, you know, people with drug addiction, and it's scary because you know that they're not, you know, because they wouldn't normally be the way they are when they're
right.
But when that evil speaks to you, you know you're talking to it. You know you are. It's, you know, that's why I don't take anything lightly, and you know, I certainly wouldn't play with a Ouija board or any of that.
Right.
Which I have on one occasion many, 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 many years ago, and I won't do it again. So,
yeah, to me, it's just one of those things that I think we really underestimate the true power of it, I guess you could say, that there is so much about this world. That's what this whole podcast is about. It's about the strangeness or the things that are way out there that go beyond most explanation. And this, I think, is really the sort of crux of it all when you're talking about exorcisms. It's not something that should ever, ever be taken lightly. And it's something that, like I say, no matter how strongly you feel about it, chances are it could be a whole lot worse. This, it, to put it in the Latin form, don't fuck with it.
Well, you know, when you shouldn't mess with things that you don't understand, and a blind man can see how much evil there is in the world today. So where do you think that all comes from?
Right. And this is something right now that I would also like to stress to any listeners that may have something that they feel could warrant an investigation or possibly a exorcism or something like that. Do not, and I mean under any circumstances, and I'm sure I'm going to get a hell of a lot of hate mail over this one, do not listen to people when they tell you, oh, I'm a demonologist and an exorcist, I can get rid of that for you. No, they cannot. This is something that, think of it in a military sense, that here you have the average everyday military. You've got your grunts out there that are, say, regular priest or any type of clergyman. I don't care what the denomination is. That's who those people are. And then you have the exorcists within the Catholic Church. Those are sort of the special forces. These are the guys that are extremely and very highly trained to do this job. And it's not something that the average person out on the street is going to pick up. It's not something that you could say that it's not something that people who claim that they just don't have the training. It's very difficult really to get across or express how little training they have compared to the people who really do. And this is not something that should be taken lightly. Sure, there have been cases where, you know, these exorcisms have taken place by someone who is not within the Catholic Church, and it has worked. Don't get me wrong, there are those cases, but this is something which you truly need guidance on, not just somebody saying they can do the job. This isn't something you go to the yellow pages to find. This is something that you want the people who are trained, and you want the best who can obviously accomplish this. You want those people called in, not somebody that's going to screw around with this and possibly make it a whole hell of a lot worse.
You know, I'd be curious to see how many priests in the Catholic Church actually are trained for exorcism.
The last I've heard from anywhere within the Catholic Church is worldwide there are less than 100.
I don't doubt it.
Who are actually trained. At one time, it was down to as few as 10. And because of Pope Francis has a very profound belief in the possibility of exorcisms, those numbers have climbed back up somewhat. Whereas Pope John Paul did not believe in it really at all, and therefore it caused the number of exorcists to actually fall down.
Yeah, I've never actually heard a number of it, but I would imagine there's probably not many anymore.
Not really.
You know, and most people when they think of the of exorcism and they think of the movie, which, you know, the movie The Exorcist, it, in some regards, it's pretty accurate from what I've read and from some of the things that I've heard. The only thing that it doesn't really address is, you know, they make it, you know, like it was only a few days. Now these things can last weeks, years, and months, and years even.
Right. I think the longest one I've heard was somewhere around a decade. Yeah. And that was a young woman who was actually a high priestess within a satanic church.
Well, now that would be, yeah, but yeah. But I mean, most of them, I mean, they're all long, and there's no, you know, there's no set time limit on how long they last. And, you know, it, a lot of it depends on the tenacity of the demon. And, you know, let's face it, they don't want to give up what they've got.
Right.
Because, you know, it's possessing a person's a whole lot better than, you know, burning in hell or wherever it is that they're at. So
it's kind of like the analogy that I've used before, that because a lot of people say, well, why would they want to possess a human being? You have to remember that demons are in a place where they're being tortured all the time. Your worst nightmares is that's what they're living on a daily basis. So when they go into a human body, all of a sudden they have this new sort of playground, and that playground is everywhere on Earth, and they can go pretty much anywhere they want. Once they have this host, they can, once the host has acknowledged them being there and accepted their being there, this is a very important thing to remember, that anyone who is possessed at one time or another had to invite them in. This is not something that, you know, a demon can just show up and say, hey, I think I'm going to go ahead and possess you if that's okay. That's not really what they do. They have to be invited in.
But that doesn't mean that you can sit there and hope for it all day long and have it happen.
Right, right.
It doesn't mean that. some people may think.
Right. And at the same time, people also think, well, you know, that they can make some type of a deal with a demon and, you know, then just ask it nicely. Hey, you know, this isn't working out for me. You mind taking a hike? That's not going to happen either. Everyone who is possessed knows that they're possessed.
Right.
You know, this is something they have invited into them. This isn't something that just shows up and takes a hold of you. As Jennifer from DNM Paranormal said, whenever she was talking about something called spirit jumping, where more or less a spirit would jump in and use her. Jennifer is a trained professional, and so she allows herself to be used. However, there is a limitation to that. She draws those limitations. That's not something that you want to go fucking around with either. It's not something where you just want to walk out and go, hey, if there's any spirits here, use my body and, you know, talk through me. That's not something you want to do. Luckily, Jennifer's had a lot of great influence, a lot of people walking her through how to do this, and it's something which she's still developing. But regardless, this is not something, if it were a demon, if she didn't draw those lines and a demon jumped in her body, this isn't something that probably anybody she knows or works with would be able to get rid of it. That's just something that, again, takes a trained professional to get out. It's not just, and at the same time, Jennifer wouldn't be able to say, hey, this isn't really working for me. You know, why don't you go possess somebody else now? That's not how it works. So whenever you take a look at it, you have a great number of people, like, you know, you brought up the point earlier, Paul, of drug addicts, alcoholics, really just all kinds of vices. I smoke cigarettes, and to a degree, I would say that's probably part of it too. That's the reason why quitting for everybody is so damn hard. But all of it, when you take a look at it, it is a type of possession. There's certainly something there. I'm a former alcoholic to this day. you know, I haven't drank in, good God, I haven't drank heavily, with the exception of, you know, a few times here and there. I haven't really drank heavily in probably 30 years, or close to it anyway. I'll say at least 20 years that, but to this day, I can be sitting around at any time and all of a sudden I just get this little, it's almost like a voice inside of me. It's just, wouldn't a whiskey taste really good about now? And it would too. And it's a constant battle to keep that off to the side. And I couldn't even imagine what it would be if my drug of choice wasn't necessarily whiskey or alcohol, if it were something much harder. And to me, that would have to be an even stronger hold on a person, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, and when you said earlier, inviting it, it's not like you're sitting down and saying, well, come on in. I'm, you know, what you mean by that, because it's not all at once. It's, you know, it's bit by bit is what it is. And, you know, it's like a drug addiction. When you sit down and the first time you do a hard drug, your addiction is not complete just from doing it once.
Right.
Of course, you're well on your way, but it's not complete at just once. It could be the third or the fourth time, and then it's got you. Same thing with alcohol. It's not from the first drink, you know, but it could be from, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later after doing it every day, then it's got you. Or smoking, after you've smoked a pack here or there, you know, then it's got you. It's stuff like that. And the demonic possession is the same way. It's not something that, you know, that just happens. You don't wake up in the morning and say, I'm possessed. That's all there's to it. Because it doesn't happen that way. You know, I mean, even if you recall the movie, you know, The Exorcist, the girl was, it started out with obsession before it became possession. And I think a lot, it goes that way. It's not all at once. You're not just all at once. So when you say invite, you're not just, you know, inviting it like to a party or something. Yeah.
You're not just opening up a door, you know, and all of a sudden it's there. It's not a delivery of a pizza.
No, it's a lackadaisical approach to your will, where you allow things to happen in your life that you wouldn't normally allow to happen, such as criminal behavior that you wouldn't normally do. But for some reason, you know, just that one day your will suffered, and that's that. And you went on that way. But so that's the way it is with the invite. Now, you know, unless there are people out there that will make pacts with the devil.
I have the question in there of why.
Well, it's simple to get things in this life that you wouldn't normally get.
That's true.
You look at it right now, the lottery here, over $1 billion. You think there's not people out there that's saying, you know, if you let me win this lottery, you know, I'll let you burn my soul in hell for the next billion years. Who's to say there's people not? So it's all about gain. It's all about, you know, getting a good job or being able to get this woman or to get this money or to just to improve your life. I mean, there's a lot of people have done that. And most of the time it comes to nothing. You know, there are people out there that are, you know, and it's not like the devil just snaps his finger and says, okay, well, here it is. I mean, for a lot of things like that, it's to get this woman or to get this job, you may do things that you wouldn't normally do to get these things. That's another way it happens, though.
I believe William Shakespeare was right on the money when he said hell is empty because all of the demons are here.
Yeah, that's a good possibility. It's a good possibility.
When I take a look at the world today, of course, people have said it for generations that the world is getting worse or whatever, but seriously, take a look at it. And I personally don't give a shit what people find to be acceptable, what's not acceptable. It's not about that. What it's about is when you take a look, when you get past all of that bullshit, you get down to, we all live by a certain set of standards. And those standards, basically, they boil down to more or less the Ten Commandments. Don't kill somebody.
Or in some interpretation of them, oh yeah.
Don't kill somebody. Well, let's take a look at how many murders we have every year. The murder rates are climbing. Just all kinds of things like that. And I think the world is becoming worse citizens towards each other. And that's what I say, that the world is crumbling down to now. And I have to ask myself, where is all that coming from? Now, don't get me wrong. I am absolutely not a person's going to sit around and tell you that the end of the world is coming next March 15th at 10 p.m. I'm not that person to make any type of predictions or anything like that. I'm sorry, people who do that stuff, I want to become evil just to take them out. But it's one of these things, I think if we really look at the world, it is becoming a worse place. And I, like I say, I really don't care what anybody's feelings are. You know, I don't care whether people think that abortion is right or wrong or any of that. It has nothing whatsoever to do with that. It follows along a basic principle of being decent human beings.
You know, I think a lot of what goes on today is... I think it has to do with the coming of the Antichrist, to be truthful with you.
I know a lot of people think that, and I don't ever fault anybody. Of course, I don't know. I can't say that, yeah, the Antichrist is here.
I think he is here. I think he is here. I don't think he's made himself known, but I think he's here. And I think a lot of the problems in the world today, how people just have no respect for each other or even care about anybody but themselves. If you think about it, the Antichrist could come about and have a solution to that problem, and it would be a real solution. It wouldn't be something, you know, that's so far-fetched, but it would be one that actually works and actually makes sense, to where people start getting along again, you know, to where we're not fighting amongst ourselves as nations and everything else. And at that point, that's when he says, you know, people would tell him, well, you know, you've done this, that this must be the second coming of God.
And then again, he's going to accept that.
Exactly. So, you know, that you, people are looking for different things, you know, different like wars and everything like that. Well, you know, the war that people are overlooking is the one that we're fighting against ourselves.
Yes.
You know, and it's not got nothing to do with whether you're, you know, Christian or Muslim or what. It has nothing to do with that. And it's got nothing to do with people from other countries. You look at the way we fight amongst ourselves in this country.
Right.
And you look at the way people fight amongst themselves in other countries. That's the war that people are talking about, that the Antichrist would have a solution for. That's the war right there. And people overlook that. They don't think there is such a thing, but there is. You know, there is a war. Whether we like it or not, we're the ones that are fighting it every day.
Very much so.
People don't want to look at it that way. And so the way I say it, keep on going then. And when the Antichrist comes about, well, maybe somebody will listen back at this podcast.
Yes. Remember, you heard it here.
Yeah, you heard it here first. Not that I'm any kind of prophet or anything like that, but... It doesn't take a genius to see the writing on the wall.
I would also like to put this out there for the listeners. Personally, I'm not a believer in the rapture itself. I do believe in other things. However, if the rapture is to come about, once the rapture takes place, for only $4.95 a month, you can subscribe and I will keep the podcast going.
Yeah. Yeah, and who knows who will be here and who won't. So, but yeah, that that's something that people need to.
I think that's absolutely a possibility.
Yeah,
and I think that there are things in this world, much like everything else we've talked about on here. I think that there are things in this world that we simply cannot wrap our tiny little human brains around, or as the demons like to actually refer to people during possessions, we cannot wrap our tiny little monkey brains around, because essentially that's all we are. And especially to a demon, we are just simply monkeys to be swept aside.
You know, but the fact is we could, if people took the time.
We very easily could, yes.
But they won't. They never will. People won't take the time. And of course, they'll call me crazy. They'll call you crazy. And that's quite all right.
Oh, shit. I hear that every day the way it is. Yeah. You know, I'm married.
Call me crazy. You know, don't listen to this podcast then. I don't. unless you want to hear raving lunatics and crazy people such as ourselves, things like that, people need to look. It's evil is on the rise, and it's almost as if the world got a Ouija board out and everybody played with it.
That's one way to take a look at it.
I mean, it's I don't know. It's something I wouldn't. I don't want to mess with this, all the evil and everything like that. It's to me, it's a terrifying thing, really. When you doubt it.
That's exactly the way the people should take a look at it. Is it's a terrifying thing, that it's not something to be messed around with. This, I've said it before on the podcast. I would say it again now, and I would probably say it until my dying day. And the simple fact is, if it happens, it could be my dying day. But I personally would like to take part in an exorcism. And I have very personal and very deep reasons why that I would want to do that. I won't say that I'm qualified to perform one or anything like that, but I believe I could offer things, and I've talked to priests and nuns about it. In fact, I've even gone so far as to talk to bishops about it, that I have a just sort of a profound dormant thing that would make me a good candidate for something like that. But that's just me. And I certainly would not blame anyone who just hears the word exorcism and wants to go screaming away and move to a different state. That wouldn't surprise me at all, you know?
Yeah, that would be me. I want no part of one. I know of them. I know how they are. I want no part of it.
Are you familiar at all with the Ammon case or the Ammon family?
I don't believe so.
They gained some popularity a few years ago. Zach Bagans bought their home that they were living in. Basically, what happened was the lady who lived there, her three children were being possessed by demons. And the three children underwent a lot of psychological evaluation and things like that. And it was eventually determined to be a possession. And what was pretty crazy was the demons were actually jumping from child to child. Sometimes more than one demon would manifest within a child, and the demons would actually physically fight each other when they were in these kids' bodies. It's rather interesting. Of course, Zach Bagans ended up, he made the documentary film Demon House out of it. It's an interesting film, not the best, but it certainly is very interesting. And I think some things happened in there that should be very eye-opening to people. I give Zach Bagans a lot of shit on this podcast and talk a lot of smack about his shows. But I have to admit, when it come to what happened with the Ammons family, that I believe that he was right on the money with everything except the fact that he tore down the house at the end of it. In the movie, there was a police officer who stopped by, and he was actually talking with Zach about it. Actually, there were a couple of police officers, and one police officer, I want to paraphrase him, but he actually used the curse words. He said, personally, I wonder if you tear this motherfucker down, what are you going to release onto the planet? And he's got a very, very good point.
Yeah, that's true.
The house itself, I think in the movie, they said there was something like five people who were associated with the house were known to have been murdered or committed suicide. So there were a lot of things that happened associated with the house. And before we get into our main one, I think you and I both are looking forward to talking about The Exorcism, which actually inspired the movie The Exorcist.
Right.
Before we get into that, this is main reason why I bring this one up is a lot of people say, well, like we were saying with the priests earlier, they may not necessarily believe in it. They may not think that it exists anymore. All of this regarding the Amons family actually started taking place in 2011. That's how recent this was. Granted, that you may not hear about them on a daily basis, but trust me, there are exorcisms somewhere in the world or possessions happening somewhere in the world probably every day of our lives. This one just happened to catch the media's attention and everything. Of course, people have already been out there trying to debunk it, everything else. But basically, the story is Latoya Amons rented this house. She lived with her mother, Rosa Campbell, and Latoya's three kids also lived there. She had two boys and a girl, I believe, or vice versa. I can't really remember. But in the town of Gary, Indiana, they moved into this house. Days after they moved in, they claimed to see swarms of black flies out on the front porch in the middle of winter. It said that they would kill these flies. They believed all of them were gone, and yet the next day they would be right back. It started out, they were hearing footsteps down in the basement coming up the stairs. Latoya, I've heard that Latoya got so frightened that she actually put a lock on the door going downstairs, and they started hearing the footsteps come up and then a loud knocking on the door. They would open up the door, and of course there would be nobody there. 2012, they actually got to a point, the kids were having so many issues that in 2012, they actually reached out to a doctor. I will not even begin to pronounce his last name. and they reached out to this doctor, and he immediately wrote it off as the kids were being delusional. And also the CPS was called in 2012, said that at first, they believed that the kids were just putting on an act for their mom and stuff like this. And then some more stories started coming out about it. Well, the Child Protective Services lead investigator, the case manager, was a lady by the name of Valerie Washington. Valerie Washington was at the hospital emergency room and went into a room with one of the children who was having one of these episodes of actually being possessed. And I'm not positive on everybody. I know that Valerie was there. There was also a police officer present. I believe a doctor and one or two nurses were present, where they were in the room with this child, and the child walked up a wall backwards, actually taking like steps and walking up the wall. The story goes that the child more or less got up on the wall, flipped over the top of him, sat down in a chair, and 5 minutes later could not remember doing any of it. It was so bad that Miss Washington actually left the hospital room. The doctor left, and so did the police officer. They all, pretty much everybody cleared out of that room after this happened. And then more and more things started happening at the house. They finally contacted a local priest, Father Michael Maganel, I believe was his name. They contacted him. He came out, started talking to the family, and he eventually performed the exorcism on the house and the children. And shortly thereafter, the family moved to Indianapolis. They got the hell out of there, moved. It's like 150 miles away from Gary, moved to Indianapolis. Miss Washington from CPS actually left being a CPS worker, left and completely moved out of state and took up a different career. Now, one of the things that's kind of important to remember there with her was this woman had actually before investigated child fatalities. And so she had seen pretty much everything, children being, you know, who were burnt, who were beaten, just shot, anything you can really imagine. And she got through all of that. However, whenever this happened, she actually had to start going to see a psychologist. I'm sure it was some form of PTSD that she received from it. Of course, as soon as all of this information started coming out, it made worldwide headlines. Zach Bagans went out the day after he heard about it, was able to get a hold of the owner, bought the house, sight unseen. He had never been to the house or anything else, bought the house sight unseen for $35,000. And he wanted to investigate this himself. He went there about a week later and said, okay, we're going to do some investigating in this. After Valerie Washington had left CPS over this, another CPS worker had came in her place. The caseworker came in. This caseworker apparently visited the house one time. And within 1 month after visiting the house, this CPS worker, now this could be all coincidence, but within 1 month, the CPS worker suffered 3 broken ribs while she was water skiing. She had third degree burns from a motorcycle. I assume that was the tailpipe or something. She broke her hand from bumping it on a table, and then she broke her ankle while running. There was a home inspector that Zach Bagans had called in to inspect the home and everything. He was on his way home and damn near had a tree fall on his car. He was awoke in the middle of the night by an unseen force choking him, and he also developed cancer. So this gives you an idea, just like everybody who's connected. When he was there, there was a woman who stopped in who claimed to have been a previous resident of the home. She came in and was talking with him, and she had her kids with her. And her one daughter, just while they were filming, just kind of seemed like she was just kind of spacing off. She had talked with Zach a little bit, and then they left the house. 2 days after they left the house, the girl told her mother she was going to kill her and tried to overdose on pills and also tried to stab herself. Something that was completely out of character for this little girl. And Father Mike ended up, he did an exorcism, so to speak, on her too. Although he didn't go out to her, she actually came to the church where he did it. But to give you some more ideas, Captain Austin, who was the chief of police out there, had been at the home. He was at a restaurant one evening. He come out of the diner, was walking out across the parking lot. Both of his feet slipped on ice. They went out from under him, and he fell on his head and was knocked unconscious. Ended up, he had to get some stitches over the thing. And then later on, he was also shot during a home invasion. Now, he did survive the shooting, thank God, but that was just another incident. Father Mike, who performed the exorcism the day before the exorcism, he was attacked by an unseen force while riding his bike. After the little girl tried to overdose and stab herself, one of Zach's crew just quit right there on the spot. One of his film crew actually quit on the spot over that little girl. There was a medium that had been on the Ghost Adventure show before with Zach. Her and her husband had both been on there. That she called up Zach and said that she was going to try to psychically reach the entity or the demon that was in the house. She later told Zach that she was able to make a connection with it. She didn't really give a whole lot of information or something to Zach about it. She just said that, yes, she was able to determine some things. 2 weeks later, she died in an apparent murder-suicide. Her husband actually murdered her and committed suicide. He called in Dr. Barry Taff, who was actually very famous for having previously worked on the Entity case, which really broke a lot of grounds when it comes to the study of ghosts and the paranormal. He did that back in the 70s. He called in Dr. Barry Taff. And after the investigation that Dr. Taff did, he made it back home and he ended up really just not feeling that well. He checked himself into the hospital and realized that all of his organs were beginning to shut down. There was another crew member that Zach had working for him that suddenly started to feel ill while inside of the house. After they made it back to the hotel, that crew member started vomiting blood. And then he kind of went completely off his rocker. It's in the documentary where he's like walking around the hotel, just saying shit like, I'm going to get you. And he got so bad, Zach actually had to fire him from the crew. After the investigation, Zach tried to talk with the guy. The guy would not talk about him and would not talk about what happened in the house. The guy just kind of went bonkers, went out and he got 666 tattooed on each of his hands, on the back of each of his hands. And then at the end of it, right before having the house tore down, Zach actually boarded up the house and had himself boarded up inside of the house to spend one night in that house by himself. And of course, you know, he had his security cameras and everything in there keeping an eye on him. But after spending one night in the house, next morning he said his eyes were just burning and they hurt unbelievably bad. And he went to see a doctor back in Las Vegas and one in California. He was eventually diagnosed with diplopia. And now, for the rest of his life, he's going to have to wear lenses with a prism. They said that there's no way to do a corrective surgery because a corrective surgery on both of his eyes could lead to complete blindness. Kevin Amons, who is the brother of LaToya, who had the house before Zach went to try to talk to LaToya. She refused to even talk to him. However, come to find out, it's probably because she was talking with a movie studio about the movie rights, and they said, hey, you can't talk to him about anything if you want to get paid. Her brother, however, came out and he talked to Zach and he shook hands with Zach, and that after Zach had been to the house, LaToya refused to allow him back in her apartment. He was living with her and she actually kicked him out of the apartment because she felt that he picked up bad energies from Zach whenever he met with Zach. It's pretty crazy whenever you take a look at all those. And that's what I keep telling everybody. I hate to sound like a diaper. I know you're going to feel like I'm always on your ass and always full of shit, everybody. But please do not mess with these types of things. This is not something to be taken lightly. And I cannot stress that enough. I don't care who they are, unless they are actually from a diocese somewhere around you. Don't believe people when they say, I'm an exorcist or I know an exorcist. No, they're not exorcist. And I, like I say, I know I'm going to receive a bunch of hate mail from people who think that they are exorcists, but this is not something to be messed around with. And to sit here and try to weed out who could possibly be an exorcist and who isn't really an exorcist out of people who tell you that they are, I couldn't do that during this podcast. However, if anybody would need some help getting hold of it, feel free to email me. It's matt@alienpodcast.net. I'll be more than happy to try to steer people in the direction of someone at the Catholic Church or possibly even an exorcist priest at the Catholic Church. Next, we're going to be discussing the exorcism of Roland Doe, or as some people have known him as Robbie Mannheim, which are both aliases, but he is most famous for actually being the real child instead of Reagan from the movie The Exorcist. This is about the actual story of the original Exorcist, what inspired the movie.
Now, this story depends. It depends on where you look for it. If you look for the local angle on it, I think it's more truthful than if you look for the national angle on it. I think it's not. They really try to downplay it and debunk the hell out of it. I don't see why they would do that, why they try to. But, you know, I guess they try to debunk everything now. There's, you know, nothing can be. Any kind of paranormal stuff has to be fake. Can't be real.
Of course. Now, most people think of the movie The Exorcist that the exorcism actually took place in the boy's home, and that's where the demon finally left Reagan and went into the priest and he dove out the window and all of that. However, that's not the case at all.
Not in this one, it's no.
What happened in this case was the main exorcism actually took place at a local area hospital in St. Louis. The Alexian Brothers Hospital. It used to be in South St. Louis. It was raised, when was that, Paul? In the late 80s or mid 90s, somewhere around there. I think it was about the mid 90s, wasn't it?
I think it was too. Yeah, I think it was.
Now, there are some interesting things about the hospital itself that happened before it was all torn down. For instance, when the demon finally left, or as some people think it was quite possibly Lucifer, before whatever entity was possessing the boy, when it left, it went through a wall in the hospital room. And what was interesting about that was it left a burn mark on the wall, a very large burn mark, several feet in diameter, as I understand. The hospital, Alexian Brothers Hospital, from that point, quit using that room. They more or less just quarantined that room. And the reason why was because the maintenance crew, every time they would try to paint over the burn spot, it would just simply bleed right through the paint, always showing that burn mark on the wall. Well, of course, that would be kind of bad publicity for the hospital to have that burn mark constantly there. So they quarantined that room. No one ever used that room. No one was ever allowed to go into that room. Well, there were some other events that started happening in that area of the hospital, and eventually they closed down, as I understand, that entire floor.
Yeah.
Then the events started carrying on to other floors within the hospital. And eventually that entire wing of the hospital was closed. And of course, eventually the entire hospital was closed down. But even though the demon had been expelled from the boy, supposedly there was enough residual effect that carried over that it was still, in fact, believed to be with somewhere within that hospital, just not in the same form.
Yeah, and this case has a lot of similarities to what was seen in the movie. This started out in a suburb of Washington, and eventually they moved here. I wish I knew when that hospital was tore down, but I I don't have it.
Can't remember offhand either.
And there was something that I can't, I was unable to find. And it said that there was a priest's diary that was found there years and years later. I don't know if there was any truth to that one story or not.
Yeah, I don't know if there was or not.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything on that. But this case was, you know, I mean, the guy that wrote The Exorcist, he drew a lot of comparisons from this incident to the movie, where he got a lot of basis for what he put in the book itself. There's a lot to this story. Yeah, he had a lot of the words carved on him that would just disappear. When it first started out, it just started out as just an obsession case where, you know, the kid would have welts all over his body and they'd go away and the next day he'd get more of them. But it was similar to what you saw in the movie, a little bit different, and it certainly took a whole lot longer to get rid of than the one in the movie. But, you know, they had to get permission from the Archbishop here to do the exorcism on him.
From what I understand, that diary was found and it was released in a book in 1993, was when the priest's diary was actually released. Now, the wing of the hospital where that occurred in apparently was the wing itself. However, like I say, the hospital itself, I believe, was completely demolished in the, I believe it was the,
yeah,
about the mid 1990s. If I find the exact date on it, I would certainly let everybody know. That was not something actually which I looked up before the podcast.
I think so.
Right. It was, I know they did it within our lifetimes that it was tore down.
I know I had seen the hospital before, and I hadn't been down there very many times, and I know I had seen it.
I just can't remember the particular date. Now, the exorcism itself went all the way back to the 1940s. I believe it was 1949 when the actual exorcism took place at the hospital. And there were a total of 3 priests, I believe, who were involved. Now, an interesting thing about that, whenever I went to parochial school in St. Louis there, I had a religion teacher who claimed to have been one of the altar boys who served the mass for one of the priests that day before he went to Alexian Brothers Hospital to perform the exorcism. So, interesting little connection, I guess you could say there. Now, from what I understand, that priest actually had several incidents happen that day, especially while he was on the way to the hospital. For instance, apparently he was driving there and was involved in some type of accident with his car. He hailed a taxi, got into the taxi. The taxi either broke down or was in an accident. He then got on a city bus. The city bus then was involved with an accident. When he got there, he found the front doors of the hospital were locked. He actually had to break a window of the hospital to get in. So rather interesting just to hear about all of the things that the priest had to go through on his way to even get to the hospital.
Right.
Now, what's interesting was some of the things that were said. You had Father Raymond Bishop, who detailed the exorcism performed on the boy. In 2013, author Thomas B. Allen emphasized that definitive proof that the boy known as Robbie was possessed by malevolent spirits is unattainable. Maybe he instead suffered from a mental illness or sexual abuse or fabricated the entire experience. Thomas Allen, I think, he's always been one of the leading debunkers of the whole story. A lot of what he does is the very same thing that we sort of preach against on here. It's, you cannot debunk something without a solid basis to do so. You can't simply say that the boy had a mental issue or was sexually abused, yada, 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 any of that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Without some type of proof. You know, you're trying to debunk something that you say that we need proof for. Well, at the same time, if you're going to come at me with that, you're going to have proof that it was what you say it is. You can't just randomly throw shit out there.
People, they always want to debunk everything. And how can you debunk something when you weren't there?
Debunkers have even gone so far just to say that the kid was simply a spoiled brat. And it's like, really? You think a spoiled brat is going to be able to come up with all of that? And one of the other things that I've always found very suspicious about the debunking with it is they would say things like, number one, there's absolutely no evidence whatsoever to do this, that it was a possession. And it shows all of the characteristics of God's involvement or the devil's involvement, you know, and all of this other bullshit. Well, to me, this is one of those cases. This goes back to 1949. When you're going back that far, this is something that, yes, there are documented possession cases before this one. None were ever as heavily documented as this.
Yeah, I think this was a case. I think it actually did happen. I think it happened the way that it was said that it did. And
one of the things I think we need to take a look at, this was also a short time after World War II. And saying that, look at what type of chaos the world was in. You and I talked about the evil that goes on every single day earlier. Well, this was a situation where you're talking about one of the most evil people on the face of the planet, Adolf Hitler. You have that type of evil unleashed on the world. Who's to say other evil things wouldn't be here as well? So to me, it makes more sense to at least say there certainly has to be a possibility of this being an actual exorcism. I'm right there with you, Paul. I 100% believe that this was an possession. Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't tried to say, well, he saw it on TV. Really? 1949?
Yeah, I mean, especially in 1949, it's not like you have all the different kinds of horror movies that are being made now. And for the kid to have gone to see and to, you know, start to mimic what he saw. So I don't see that as being part of it. You know, and I don't know if the guy's still alive now or if he's not. The article that I'd read, he was living in Nebraska somewhere, but because there hasn't been anything written about this in a long time, so it's hard to tell whether he is or if he isn't. And of course, his name was never ever made public. Probably never will, unless the person's dead and somebody wants to try to make some money off of it. It was a case that was, you know, there's not a whole lot out there about it. I've seen stuff on TV about it, and it just didn't do it justice, really. I heard Father Malachi say years ago how it was real and that it, you know, that it did happen, and the Catholic Church didn't cover it up. It just wasn't talked about very much. It's almost, I mean, if you read the story, if you've seen the movie The Exorcist, it's very, very similar. Very similar. I mean, a lot of the stuff that the writer of the book took, he took just about everything from the actual case, and he didn't put too much of his own spin on a lot of things that in the movie or the book. I know the movie probably took a lot of liberties with things, but I don't know that it's ever actually been written up right myself. I don't know that it's ever been documented very well. I know that it's one that a lot of people know of, but I'm not sure that they know much about what. I just don't know that there's a whole lot of it written up. I mean, a lot of the stories that I looked at, you know, a lot of it was all, you know, a bunch of BS, or they're just trying to debunk everything that that happened in it. And I, you know, it's, I don't know. I get upset when I read stuff like that and people are just trying to debunk the hell out of it. It's not, I mean, it's not like some of these TV shows you see where you can tell that they're not real. You know that, you know, this is something that probably, man, it would be pretty difficult to get written up now, because there's probably not enough of the people left alive that can still tell the story.
Even if he is still alive, you know, he may not remember a lot of the story, because you know, depending on the depth of the possession itself.
Right. That's true. That's true. Yeah. You got to keep that in mind too. Not to mention he's probably spent a lifetime trying to put it out of his mind. If anything,
there was a skeptic by the name of Joe Nickel who said something to the effect of there was no credible evidence because that the boy was possessed by demons or anything evil, and he maintained that it was so childishly simple or even just complete fakery. Do you really think that, sure, you have things like Munchausen or Munchausen by proxy, things like that, that might explain some of the damage that was done to the boy. But I can't see everything that was done just being some big fakery. I really can't. And their biggest argument as well, if somebody was really determined, they could do that. And it's like, yeah, somebody who would really be determined to pull that kind of shit off in front of people? No. Just isn't going to happen. Not only would they have to be really determined, they would also have to be some sneaky little shits to be able to get away with it. Because it did happen in front of people.
Yeah, and why would you want to bring that kind of attention to yourself? I mean, if you're attention seeking, why would there's other ways. Why would you want to bring that? Because they're going to think you're crazy.
You know? Right.
So it's going to...
They're going to lock your ass in a loony bin.
That's what I mean. It's going to get you 15 minutes of attention from somebody you want the attention from, but it's going to get you how many days locked up?
Yeah.
That don't make sense, and especially for the time period. I mean, if you think about it, if somebody does that now, well, then they've probably got some sort of motive behind it, whether they want to make a buck or they're trying to get a... They want to tell a story or... But back then, I'm not so sure of that. I'm not so sure. And I don't know if there was ever any connection made between this kid and the guy that wrote The Exorcist. I don't, you know, if there was ever any money changed hands for any of this information, I that was never said. So it's, you know, it's kind of hard to tell if, you know, if the person ever did ever make any money off of anything, which I really seem to doubt, unless it was totally under the table, which I guess that could happen too, but it'd be kind of hard to do, pay somebody off and they remain nameless like that. So,
right.
But I suppose it could be, but I don't know. I don't try to debunk all this stuff. I think it was a real thing because I'm a firm believer in exorcism, and to believe in that, I mean, you know, you see the evil in the world today, you know that it's there.
Right.
I mean, gosh, you watch a McDonald's commercial and you see somebody eating a Big Mac with a pissed off look on their face. Yeah. What? Come on. You know, I mean, who are you mad at?
Yeah. I personally understand that because they did away with McDonald's and cookies.
Well, I get that, but are you going to get pissed off at your Big Mac because you're eating it?
No. You're damn right.
Well, you might.
Yeah.
Because you're probably more of a quarter pounder guy, anyhow. Yeah. I've seen you eat them cheeseburgers before.
Hey, don't get me started on the McRib.
I was going to say, yeah, he's going to get demonic on a fucking McRib here in a minute.
Hell yeah. I personally just want to, again, I cannot stress it enough, seek professional help.
Yeah, get a priest. Put the damn Ouija boards away. I mean, come on. My experience with that lasted about 10 minutes. You know, everybody says, oh, yeah, if you start asking questions, you'll feel the thing move, you know. Oh, come on. No, it moved. And that was the end for me. And I'm done.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Nope. Yep.
Yeah, I was like, nope, I'm done. See ya. That ain't normal, because that wasn't me moving it. Put the Ouija boards away. Don't dabble in the black stuff and
it's amazing to me. I know a lot of people that say, oh, Ouija boards are just fine. You know, I know what I'm doing. No, just by you saying that, that tells me you don't know what you're doing. You are a dumbass portal. That's all you have just become.
I was going to say, yeah, you open the door and tell them, hey, whoever's here, come on in.
Yeah.
And set up shop, because that's what they're going to do.
And they don't understand how Ouija boards work, that for people who don't know how they work or what's really going on, trust me, when you first start playing around with one, you contact a spirit, it could very well turn out that it's going to act like it's your best friend in the world. It's going to do everything it can, because it's like Paul said, it's a slow building process. This isn't something that just happens after using it one time. It's a slow building process. And anybody that says, well, I can close that portal that's opened up by a Ouija board, no, you can't. You really can't. And you're an idiot for thinking that you can, because
it doesn't work that way.
By the time that portal is opened up, that it's too late. That portal is opened up beyond the person playing the Ouija board's ability to control.
And just because the spirit says it's your dead Uncle Joe doesn't mean it is.
Yeah.
And once them spirits come home, man, they ain't leaving.
No. And keep in mind that I tell you this as a person who Ouija boards won't even work around me. So I know, though, the damage that can be done with them. And I know how people are manipulated with them. That, like Paul said, you're going to think it's your dead Uncle Joe and he's coming back to give you the score of the next World Series so you can go place a bet in Vegas. That isn't how it works.
No, it doesn't work that way. And
you start playing with a Ouija board, you want to know what to bet on? It's a pretty damn sure bet your ass is going to be up a creek without a paddle if you keep playing with it.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't. Mm-mm. Nope.
I do have a few things that I would like to tell the listeners about. I think we're going to possibly try to start doing something on November 10th. That particular episode of Saturday night on November 10th. I think we're going to run our first live show. How do you feel about that one, Paul?
That'd be fun. I hope we get some people to call in.
We'll start doing our live shows then, and I encourage everybody to call in. We're still going to have the same phone number, area code 573-4 area 51. That's 573, the number 4 area 51. If you would like to call into the show, just call in. We'll talk about it, anything and everything. However, if you do call into the show, please understand that we may not necessarily be taking calls at that time. It sort of depends on what's going on with the podcast and whether or not we're going to have time. We may be on a subject, or we may even have a guest at that time where we're not going to be able to take that phone call. But we're going to start doing, from that date forward, we'll start trying to do 2 hours every Saturday night talking about these subjects and have some open lines in that for people to be able to call in and talk to us. You'll call in, and I'm sure you're going to be talking to probably Dusty, who is my wife, or possibly one of the other people who are helping us out with the podcast. But you call in and talk to them, tell them why you're calling in, and they'll get you patched right through to us as soon as possible and get you on the air with us. But until that happens, or if you have any questions or any comments, like we say at the end of every show, if you want your free, no obligation anal probe, feel free to send us an email, paul@alienpodcast.net or matt@alienpodcast.net. If you have any questions on exorcism, send me over an email. I'll be more than happy to answer what I can. And if I can't answer the question, I will certainly try to put you in contact with a Catholic priest who can get you pointed in the right direction with that.
And we'll be doing a show next week. And until then, when we tune back into Attack Culture once again.
Have a good night, everybody.
To find out more about the show, or promptly send your death threats, or for your free, no-obligation anal probe, please visit alienpodcast.net.